You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So last week was fun. There was a real party in my mentions. First up, I was one of the listed authors of a new study about gay couples and cuckolding, a study published in an academic journal that wound up being covered by CNN. The right wing blew a gasket about this study. I have a theory. Cuckolding makes conservatives uncomfortable because, as other studies have shown, politically conservative types tend to be more interested and aroused by cuckolding, which makes sense if you think about it for a second. And of course, thinking about things even for a second, not something conservatives are very good at. Makes sense because conservatives tend to be more quote unquote conservative about marriage and worse at it, as divorce and out of wedlock birth stats demonstrate. They also tend to be more quote unquote conservative about racial issues, cough, cough, more racist, cough, and kinks. What are kinks about? They're about transgression and violating taboos. So yeah, violating the taboo against adultery is going to be hotter for conservatives on average, and you basically have to regard interracial sex as taboo before you can fetishize transgressing or violating that taboo. Anyway, the study, The Psychology of Gay Men's Cuckolding Fantasies, doesn't promote cuckolding, gay or otherwise. It simply notes that the thing is happening, asks why the thing is happening, and tries to determine if the thing that's happening is a positive thing or a negative thing for the couples involved. You can read it, if you care to, at the Archives of Sexual. Also last week, also blowing up my mentions, apparently a grade school in California thought it would be a good idea to put up a bulletin board about gender diversity and sexual orientation. And that is a good idea. Queer kids exist and gender nonconforming kids exist. Queer adults don't magically appear fully formed on floats at the gay pride parade when we're 21 years old. Gender expression is diverse, and that's a message little kids, grade school age kids, need to hear. Because some of them are gender nonconforming, and the bullying of gender nonconforming kids, most of whom will grow up to be gay, many of whom will grow up to be trans, that shit starts as early as first grade. Earlier. Anyway, the bulletin board, good idea. But it featured a quote from me, a quote that made roughly the same point I just did about bullying of gender nonconforming kids. That didn't sit well with right-wing talking headcase Todd Starnes. He's a contributor to Fox News, and he has his own radio show.
Making radio great again, Todd Starnes.
Before we listen in, personally, me myself, I like to think I'm a little too edgy for grade school bulletin board presentations. So while I appreciate the impulse to put up the bulletin board and do what they can at this grade school to make it a safer place for queer kids, I probably myself would have left me out of it. Anyway, let's hear what Todd's caller, a concerned parent, had to say.
Good morning from California. How are you, Todd?
Well, I'm doing well, and I really appreciate you going on the record here and telling us about what's happening. So take us through the billboard that you saw there at Rancho Romero Elementary School.
Okay, wait. It's a bulletin board in a school hallway. Not a billboard along a highway.
The board said, "Who are you?" Question mark. With okay, we have 4-year-old and 11-year-old through 11 at our school, and I don't know about you, but "Who are you?" was not something that I could even answer at that age. I was more concerned with having fun and just learning. In fact, you know, learning about who you are doesn't really happen probably till you get through college.
All right, wait just a second. Really? People don't know who they are until they get through college, don't know who they're attracted to, what gender they are. That should come as news to most lesbian, gay, bi, and trans folks, almost all of whom knew who they were long before getting to college. And it would come as news to most straight people, too, wouldn't it? Don't you guys know who you are before you get to college?
Now, I want to bring up another component of this. One of the pictures on this bulletin board is of Dan Savage, who is a nationally syndicated sex columnist. He also runs a porn festival, And there's a quote from him on this page. They're glorifying this guy as a role model.
He was put up as a sort of like a role model would be, with a quote like, if you would put up Martin Luther King, who is clearly a great role model. This guy, if you do a quick online search, I had no idea who he was. But in a 1 minute search, I found out he was throws this annual pornography contest called Hom. He does despicable things to anyone he dislikes, and he dislikes anyone who's religious. He makes that very clear, and he hates conservatives. In our schools, I would say over half of the parents and the families there are conservative families. But clearly nobody approved this person or looked into him, or if they didn't look into him, then it was input purposely. That would be really bad. But he is a known pornographer. He has made quotes that said there's good pedophilia. One of my transgender friends told me he's a known pedophile to the transgender community. So having him up there for a child's role model was just disgusting to us. We couldn't even believe it.
Well, I want to step in and say I have not been able to independently verify that part of the allegations surrounding Mr. Savage.
Starnes notes in the program that he didn't identify this parent because so much hate and vitriol from the left, and he didn't want this parent targeted for hate and vitriol. And of course, there's nothing hateful or vitriolic about accusing someone of being a pedophile or making excuses for pedophilia. Anyway, for the record, I don't hate religious people, I hate religious hypocrites, and I don't hate conservatives either, even though they are wrong about and in charge of, right now, everything. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that this woman doesn't have transgender friends. But I got to address Todd Starnes' weasel words there. Someone comes on his show and accuses me of being a known pedophile, and he breaks in to say that he hasn't been able to independently verify the charge, so it's unsubstantiated as of this moment, at least so far as Todd Starnes personally is concerned. The implication is clear. Starnes is saying that, yeah, maybe Dan Savage is a pedophile. Someone out there has the evidence, but we haven't independently verified it yet. But I can't, Todd Starnes, come out and say that or let you say it without interjecting here because I don't want to get sued. I'm going to let you say it on my radio show twice. This is how the right wing pushes a smear campaign and moves it up the media food chain. People are saying, the question is being asked, someone said on my radio show, but we haven't independently verified. To be on the receiving end of, we installed phones here at the Lovecast as an experiment to see if we could start taking live calls, and it looks like we're getting our first live call. Let's take a quick break from the top of the show rant and take a call. Hello, caller. You are on the air.
Hello.
Yes, caller. Go ahead.
Hello. Hello. Am I on the air?
You are.
Oh, thank you. I was listening to you talk about Todd Starnes, and I was calling in to say that a friend of mine told me that Todd Starnes is known in the Christian community for fellating kids.
I have to break in here and say that these charges have not been substantiated. I have not been able to independently verify that Todd Starnes fellates children.
Not children. Baby goats. Todd Starnes fellates baby goats. It's apparently well known among conservative Christian pet goat enthusiasts. The man just can't resist baby goat penis. He sees a baby goat, and before you know it, that goat's on its back, and Todd is going to town. What's the expression? It's like he's asphyxiating, and there's oxygen in those tiny baby goat balls. The man's a notorious goat fellator. That's what my friend said.
Well, that's very interesting, caller, but I haven't substantiated it. This has not been independently verified.
He also leaves Snackwell cookies and urinals at Fox News Studios and then comes back later to nibble on them.
Again, not substantiated.
Todd Starnes performs recreational colonoscopies.
Not independently verified.
Todd Starnes regularly masturbates to mental images of Rush Limbaugh titty-fucking Steve Bannon.
I don't know how you would even go about verifying that.
Before he started fellating baby goats, Todd Starnes used to...
Okay, caller, thank you, but we're going to have to go. Oh, looks like we are out of time for the top of the show rant. So we're going to have to get right to your calls. But to be clear, Todd Starnes may be a goat-filleting, urine-soaked, Snackwell cookie-nibbling, recreational colonoscopy-performing, Limbaugh-on-Bannon, titty-fuck-scene-fantasizing pervert. But those allegations, as of yet, have not been substantiated or independently verified by me personally. And now your calls. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by adamandeve.com. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter the offer code SAVAGE at checkout.
Hey, Dan, this is Sarah. I have a question about my boyfriend and I moving in together. It's only been about a month and a half, but my family's for it and my friends aren't. I would just like to hear what you have to say about people moving in together. Oh, yeah, we're both 28.
I'm going to have to side with your friends on this one, under the assumption that your friends have spent more time with you and your boyfriend than your family. Theoretically, you're hanging out, you're with your boyfriend, you're not with your aunt, you're not with your mom, probably not with your siblings, you're with your friends. So your friends have seen you two together, your friends see how you interact. Your friends probably have a better read on this relationship at 1.5 months right now than your family does, but also that you do, because you are still in the love is blind stage. I'm not saying it's a toxic relationship. I'm not saying he's an asshole. I'm not saying you shouldn't move in with him eventually. But 1.5 months, even if everything was great and your friends loved him and they were on the same side that your family's on, it's too soon. Do not move in with someone that you have known for 6 weeks. As a general rule, don't do it. That feeling you have right now, oh, I want to be with this person all the time. I want to live with this person. I want to know how this person smells in the morning and familiarize myself with their farts and burps. That feeling, if you still have that feeling a year from now, that's when you move in. You can't trust that feeling at 1.5 months. That feeling has led many people to make premature commitments. It is easy to get your name on a lease. It is easy to marry in haste. Extricating yourself from a relationship when you have signed a lease together or moved in together too soon or gotten married during the infatuation stage is a lot fucking harder. Don't do it. Disregard what your family's telling you. Listen to your friends, and you can count me among your friends, and I am telling you what they're telling you. It is too soon.
Hey, Dan Savage. I'm a fan of your show, and my boyfriend doesn't know you at all. But me and him have a problem, and I am here to hand the phone to him to tell you what this problem is. Please solve it.
Okay, hi. So my girlfriend and I have been together for about 8 months or so. Whenever we have sex, she like doesn't enjoy it at all. And like, I don't know if it's like something I'm doing or what the deal is, but it makes me feel kind of shitty to be honest about myself. And I know that in the past other guys have, you know, done it for her. And I'm like, I don't know what else to do. Like, I don't know how to solve the problem. I don't know how to, you know, actually like make her feel good. And I know it's possible because other people have. So, I mean, she says she doesn't know her own body, but I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Only 5 guys out of many guys have done it for her. I don't know what else to do. Any help would be appreciated.
I wish you'd left a callback number because I have a question. When your girlfriend, when your girlfriend says that she doesn't enjoy sex with you at all, which is kind of a huge and scary thing to say to someone, what does she mean by that? Does she mean that sex with you is unpleasant, physically uncomfortable, emotionally traumatizing? Or does she mean that sex with you, she's not coming, she's not climaxing during sex with you? And is she defining not climaxing as not enjoying and then adding at all at the end there? Is she telling you that there are no pleasurable sensations? The intimacy, the touch, whatever else you're doing, the intercourse that you're having, none of it is pleasant. None of it is enjoyable. It is all a fucking sex shit show so far as she's concerned when she has sex with you. If that's the case, I don't understand why she's still with you. If that's not the case, if it's just that she's not coming with you, she needs to give you a little bit more information. She needs to walk you through what works for her instead of just saying, hi, girlfriend. You can't just say, there were these 5 other guys. They knew what they knew how to make me come. What's wrong with you? You need to give him more info. You need to draw him a map. And you can't draw him that map or give him that info if you don't know your own way around your own genitalia. So my question for you, girlfriend, is do you masturbate? Can you make yourself come? If so, masturbate in front of your boyfriend. Show him how it works. Show him what your arousal patterns, habits, plateaus, your point of orgasmic inevitability. Show him what all of that looks like and guide him through it. What you're doing right now to your boyfriend is a little unfair. You're saying you're bad at sex and that's it. You're bad at sex. Sex with you is terrible. I don't enjoy it at all. Now fix that. Get to work on that. What you're saying to your boyfriend right now is not helpful. It's not constructive. You aren't giving him the tools that he needs to get you to a place where sex is enjoyable in some way, or he's getting you off. He's making you come. So you two need to start talking to each other. Really, the girlfriend, you need to start talking to him. And I challenge you, if you can't make yourself come, and a lot of women out there don't masturbate. They arrive at partnered sex never having gotten themselves off, and they look at some usually young man and they go, all right, make me come. It's all on you. And if you can't make me come, then you're doing it wrong, or sex with you doesn't work. And guys don't arrive at partnered sex not knowing how their dicks work, not knowing how exactly what they need to get off, because guys are encouraged to, are socialized to, feel entitled to self-pleasure, to masturbate, and women are not encouraged to do the same. Women are slut-shamed. Women pick up a lot of societal cues about their genitalia being gross or disgusting, and they don't feel as entitled to pleasure. And sex education often centers, as they say, male pleasure and doesn't even mention female pleasure. So you have young women who go through shitty sex education, even what a lot of liberals and progressives regard as comprehensive sex education, that talks about birth control, that talks about reproduction, but doesn't talk about pleasure. So a lot of women move through sex ed without ever hearing that sex is supposed to feel good for them too, and that solo sex, masturbation, is for them too. And they arrive at partnered sex and the dude can't do it for them, and they think there's something wrong with the dude. And maybe there is something wrong with the dude. But you can make that dude better if you can show him what he needs to do, what works for you. But you can't show him what works for you and what you need him to do if you don't know what those things are, if you don't know what works for you. So, girlfriend, caller, masturbate in front of him. If you don't masturbate, start masturbating. Boyfriend, don't have sex with her for right now. Take intercourse off the menu. If what you're doing is not pleasurable for her at all, stop doing all of it. Your assignment as a couple is you're going to spend the next month, if indeed you want to continue to see each other, not having intercourse, not having oral sex, just being intimate, just laying with each other, just touching each other, and then masturbating together. Mutual masturbation. Learn how her genitals work. Learn what works for her. Show her what works for you. Dirty talk with each other. Really connect with your brains while you stimulate your genitals and each other's genitals with your hands. And perhaps a vibrator. But for right now, this intercourse that you're having that isn't pleasurable for her at all and that you're on the rack about, boyfriend, yeah, stop doing it. Doctor, it hurts when I do that. Stop doing that. Dan, the sex is awful. Stop having that awful sex. Back way the fuck up. Masturbate. Blue Apron is the leading meal kit delivery service in the United States. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, even inept in the kitchen, jerks like me. With Blue Apron, your meals contain farm-fresh seasonal produce, meat with no added hormones, sustainably sourced seafood, and other solid, wholesome ingredients to help you make delicious chow in your own kitchen. You'll be able to whip up great meals all in under 45 minutes and without a trip to the grocery store. They offer a two-person plan, a family meal plan, and a wine plan. It's convenient, it's flexible, and it's super high quality. Terry and I love it. We are customers, and we think you should give it a try, too. Coming up on the menu this month, steaks and cheesy mashed potatoes with steak sauce and roasted carrots, and pickled beet grilled cheese sandwiches with mixed citrus salad. Blue Apron is treating Savage Lovecast listeners to your first three meals of $30 value with your first order if you visit blueapron.com/savage. So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off with free shipping at blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Or as we call it in my house, referring to me, the only way he's ever cooked.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 29-year-old bi male from Idaho. I am in a relationship with the most beautiful 33-year-old woman that I've ever met. We have the best sexual life, the best sex chemistry. Pretty much everything is amazing in the relationship except for one thing. She's had a really traumatic past that I won't get into in too much detail, but a lot of male violence, sexual violence, and these random insecurities spring up from what our doctors consider extreme post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't know, some advanced version of PTSD. And she ends up going into emotional outbursts about just random stuff. And the arguments get to a point where it's damn near violent. She's small and I'm a larger male, a normal sized guy. And so she can't really hurt me. She'll end up getting kind of violent. And there have been times where I've tried to just get out of the apartment and I've ended up knocking her over. I start to feel like I'm abusive. And that has always been a giant fear of mine. I've never wanted to be that guy. And so I guess we're in a BDSM relationship, and so it makes it even more complicated, starting to kind of feel abusive or something like that. And again, that's my worst fear. I never want to be that person. And we almost broke up just recently because, well, she went into a fit of rage and things happened. And I felt like what she did was unacceptable. And I, even though I love everything about her, everything about our relationship, I'm thinking about ending it still. And I don't know if not breaking up was a good decision. Tell me what you guys think.
I think you're in an abusive relationship. There is a pattern here of escalating violence that is only going to get worse over time. Like a lot of people in abusive relationships, you look at the other things about your relationship and it all seems wonderful. Great sex, shared interests, shared passion, shared friends. Everything's wonderful, except at semi-regular intervals that seem to be coming closer together, my partner flies into a rage and becomes physically violent. If the genders were reversed, if you were a woman calling and describing everything that you've unpacked in your relationship, no one would hesitate to tell you that your partner is an abuser and you need to get out. But because it's a BDSM relationship, because you're the male, because you're bigger than she is, doesn't make it not an abusive relationship. Doesn't make you not the victim. And there are additional ways in which you could be victimized in this relationship than just the violence that you're being subjected to by your partner. She flies into a rage. She gets violent and physical with you. You have to get out of there, which on one occasion you described involved pushing past her and knocking her over. Let's say she ends up with a big bruise. Let's say those altercations get worse. And as is typical in abusive relationships, they get worse. And she calls the cops. Who are the cops going to believe? The much larger male in this relationship with a BDSM component? Or the smaller, submissive girlfriend with the bruises and the history of trauma and victimization? Yeah, probably not you. For your own safety, you need to get the fuck out of this relationship. For your physical safety, for your sanity, you need to get the fuck out of this relationship. And you need to get out of this relationship now. It is a tragedy that she has been abused. Many abusers were abused. That doesn't excuse being abusive. And that doesn't obligate your victim to stick around and continue to be victimized. Your girlfriend needs to go get help. Your soon-to-be, hopefully, ex-girlfriend needs to go get help. She needs a therapist, not a punching bag. Get out. End it. Pack your shit up and go. You can make this Valentine's Day one you'll never forget with this amazing offer from AdamandEve.com. Through Valentine's Day, you'll receive 50% off just about any item. Just go to adamandeve.com and you'll find thousands of adult entertainment products, including toys, lingerie, and a seemingly endless selection of adult DVDs. And there's more. They'll also throw in free shipping on your entire order. So check out adamandeve.com today for this special Valentine's offer. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter code SAVAGE at checkout. S-A-V-A-G-E, that's SAVAGE at adamandeve.com.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 26-year-old female calling from London. I'm just calling in regards to a friend of mine at the moment. He's in an abusive relationship with a girl I used to be friends with before, you know, realizing she was not very sane. So last night he messaged me at 3 a.m. asking if he could stay the night because he'd gone for 2 drinks with a friend and she's absolutely lost her mind, destroyed their TV, smashed everything in their house, their PlayStation, had painted all over their sheets with permanent marker, had poured liquor on his clothes. When he got to my house, his shirt was ripped and hanging off him. You know, it was 3 a.m, so I didn't talk about it with him then. I just got some bedding and put him to sleep. And I messaged him today, and he said they were working it out. This isn't the first time something like this has happened. Another time when he'd been at my house at 2 a.m, she showed up and tried to climb my balcony to get access to my house because we weren't opening the door. She's frightened me on many occasions. She's frightened my friend. I'm just really worried for him at the moment because I think he thinks that this is a normal relationship or, you know, kind of normal conflict. And it's really confusing him because he can't reconcile the two sides of her, you know, the charming side of her and then the dangerous side of her. And I'm just not really sure where I stand. He used to have feelings for me, and that's been the point of contention with her for a long time. And I just feel like if any advice I give him regarding this will seem biased and unwelcome and not my place. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I speak to his parents or something. From what I understand, I think they have quite a good impression of this girl. They like her, but I'm not sure they have any idea of how she does behave. Yeah, it would be really great if you could let me know what I do.
It's important to note that most victims of domestic violence are women. There are, however, male victims of domestic violence. A CDC study published in 2010 found that 1 in 3 women, 35.6%, were subjected to violence by an intimate partner. That same study found that 1 in 4 men, 28.5% in the United States, also subjected to violence by an intimate partner. According to the stats, the 1 in 3 women who were victimized by intimate partner violence, quote, experienced multiple forms of rape, stalking, or physical violence. Male victims experienced physical violence alone, typically, with only 6.3% experiencing physical violence and stalking. So there are more female victims of domestic violence, and the domestic violence that women are subjected to tends to be more severe. Just wanted to toss that out there since we've had 2 calls in a row now about male victims of domestic violence. I didn't want people to leave with some sort of false impression or to get a sense of a false equivalency. Men are usually the perpetrators of domestic violence, not the victims. Your friend is a victim of domestic violence. Your friend, for the time being, is choosing, it seems, against your counsel to stay with this woman. If I were in your shoes, I would call in the cavalry. I would speak to his family members. I would speak to other friends. I would stage an intervention. I would also communicate to my friend that our friendship is going to end or go on hiatus as long as he's with this person who is not just targeting him for violence, but also targeting me or you, caller, crawling up your balcony, breaking into your apartment. So long as she is in his life and he is in your life, she is in your life. And her rage, her violence, is also a risk for you. And if the only way to protect yourself from her is to cut him out of your life so long as he's with her, that is sometimes what people have to do. It's an awful position to be in because one of the weapons that perpetrators of domestic violence use against their victims is isolation. They want to drive off the friends and the family. They want to cut their victims off from support networks. They don't want their victims talking to friends who are going to tell them that they need to leave this person or having good relationships with family who could swoop in and intervene or offer them a place to stay or encourage them to leave or offer them the money they need to leave. And it can feel like you're aiding the abuser when you contribute to the isolation of the victim by saying, hey, as long as you're with this person, I can't have you in my life. And it's galling because you are aiding the abuser by contributing to the isolation of the victim. You should have an explicit conversation about that with your friend when you tell him you can't hang with him right now, that he can't run to your apartment to hide from his girlfriend right now because you don't want to be her victim too. And sometimes that is the epiphany. And rather than contributing to their isolation, that helps your friend see what's going on, what being in this relationship is costing them, and it inspires them to get the fuck out of the relationship. You tell someone you can't see them because their partner is violent and you fear their partner and you think that they should leave their partner and you're being targeted for violence too, and therefore, and your friend says, oh my God, okay, right, help me. Then don't run away. Then help. Then do everything you can to help your friend extricate themselves from that relationship, even if it incurs some risk. Do you have a right to say to someone, so long as you're with this toxic, violent person, we can't be friends right now. We can't hang out. The risk to you is tremendous. And the risk to me is not as large, but unacceptable. Sorry you're in this position. I'm sorry that your friend is in this position. Call in the cavalry, speak to his family, speak to other friends, speak to him. And if he chooses to stay with this person against your sound counsel, you have to pull the plug on this friendship for the time being. You know Issa Rae from her hit HBO series Insecure. Now you can listen to 2 seasons of her acclaimed podcast Fruit on Stitcher Premium. This gripping audio drama tells the story of X, an African-American pro football player, on a journey of self-discovery and sexual exploration. Written and directed by Issa Rae, the Sarah Award says Fruit raises the bar on what is possible in audio fiction. Start listening to Fruit now with a 1-month free trial to Stitcher Premium. Go to stitcherpremium.com/fruit and use the promo code SAVAGE at checkout to get your free month. That's stitcherpremium.com/FRUIT.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 20-year-old straight woman from the Midwest, and I was raised very Catholic. I have a lot of family members that are still very Catholic, and I consider myself, like, I don't know. I don't want to say a lukewarm Catholic, but, you know, I love being an ally for gay rights, and I just don't agree with everything that the Catholic Church says. But since I've been in college, I haven't been in, like, a big relationship, but I have been, like, masturbating. You know, that's not the greatest thing to do, I guess, like, when you're Catholic. So I told one of my cousins, who was very Catholic, and she really just shamed me for it, and I just felt really bad about it. And I, you know, I have a view that this is, like, very important about self-expression and, like, knowing myself and, like, being okay not being in a relationship right now. I just think it's healthy and important. So can you give me some advice on how to, like, explain that to someone who has a different view and how I cannot let that bother me in the future? Because it did. It really bothered me. It felt like I was doing something really wrong.
So a long, long time ago, longer than I care to admit or quantify or put an exact number to, I had to look my Catholic mom in the eye and tell her not that I masturbated, which she assumed that all of her sons did, but that I put other men's dicks in my mouth. My mother had a problem with that at first, but she came around in part because I stood my ground, in part because me putting other men's dicks in my mouth was a non-negotiable feature of my adult life and would be a feature of my adult life going forward. And if my mother wanted to be a part of my life, she was going to have to accept that part of me as well. Not tolerate it, not put up with it, not pretend that that wasn't happening, not dwell on it. Parents don't dwell on the sex lives of their children. Unpleasant mental images for many straight parents leap immediately to mind when your kids come out to you as gay, because of course they do. Those unpleasant mental images don't leap to mind when you contemplate your kids being straight, because straight is a default setting. Your kids were always straight. Straight isn't just sex, but for a lot of people, particularly 35 years ago, all gay was sex, because gay people didn't get married. They didn't have relationships or families or children. You ran off to be gay because there was a certain kind of sex that you wanted to have that disqualified you from all those things. Not the case anymore, because we fought and screamed and yelled and made demands and made change. Progress. So here's my advice to you, as someone who 35 years ago had to tell mom, I put dicks in my mouth, stand your ground. This is a non-negotiable feature. You masturbate. I have lots of cousins. I'm from a huge Catholic family. I have 8 billion cousins. We typically, when we run into each other, don't talk about how and when and whether we masturbate. So Not sure how this came up or whether it needed to come up, but after it came up and your cousin sex shamed you, slut shamed you for masturbating, the correct response was, ha, 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 fuck off. That was what you should, that should have been the end of the conversation. Masturbation is healthy. It's natural. It's why our arms are so long. If God didn't really want us to masturbate, maybe we'd look a bit more like Tyrannosaurus rexes and our arms wouldn't reach our junk and we'd have to hump pillows or banisters or whatever else. But no, our arms are nice and long. In fact, they reach just about everywhere we need them to go. And you need to masturbate. It's important for partnered sex. You should, if you want to continue to talk about masturbation with your cousin, you could tell her that knowing your own body, that knowing what feels good is going to put you in a position that when you do partner with someone, when you do get married, you will be able to help your husband understand how your body works, how to provide you with pleasure, because you will be able to show him, because you know yourself well enough to show him what works, and that you will have, as a consequence of you masturbating, a stronger sexual bond, because you're less likely to have sexual disconnect, sexual problems. You're likelier to find pleasure in each other successfully if you know what pleasure feels like and looks like, and you can show him per our call earlier. So yeah, from one Catholic to another, I'm a pretty fucking Catholic. Dad was a deacon, mom was a lay minister. I went to a seminary, thought about being a priest. Pretty fucking Catholic, my family. At 15, I was ready to, 16, I was ready to tell mom about the dicks in my mouth thing and stand my ground. You are an adult, and we are talking about a cousin. And cousins, unlike mothers, are disposable. You can cut a cousin out of your life pretty easily, and I would encourage you to do just that. A mom you have to work on, a mom you have to bring around. Mom I had to have lots of conversations with about the gay thing because I loved her. And I knew that she loved me and we could get past it and that she would one day accept it. A cousin? A cousin who had a problem with me being a cocksucker? I wouldn't go to a lot of effort to talk that cousin out of it. I would laugh at that cousin and go talk to my other cousins who aren't assholes or homophobes. I would encourage you to do the same. Brush off your cousin. Go talk to your other cousins who aren't masturbatophobes. And I'm hoping you have some. And as one of the tech-savvy at-risk youth just pointed out to me, odds are high that your cousin is a masturbator herself. Odds are high when you meet a religious person who condemns you for your own private sexual choices that you didn't really need to tell them about in the first place, and they just obsess about it and blow up about it, that they are externalizing an internal conflict. That your cousin is punishing you for her sins because she not only masturbates but feels terrible about it and wants you to feel terrible about it too. You are not obligated to feel terrible about it because your cousin is a twat-phobic mess. Scared of her own pussy. Scared of her capacity for pleasure. Her God, if you believe in the Creator, God-given capacity to experience sexual pleasure, partnered or solo. Stop wasting time angsting about what your cousin thinks about your masturbatory routines. And one last bit of advice from the gay coming out experience. I tell this to queer kids all the time. Don't fear your family's rejection. Make them fear yours. Applies to your cousin too, and you, straight masturbating girl, applies there too. She's judging you and being angry and rejecting you because you masturbate. If you take that in, if that works, she's going to keep at it. If you tell her, look, drop it or I'm never talking to you again, which is an option, and she values the relationship that she has with you, she'll fucking drop it. If she doesn't drop it, fuck her. Block her. Avoid her at funerals and weddings and wherever else you encounter your crazy Catholic sex-phobic cousin.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old female calling from the Twin Cities, and I have a slight problem. I tend to be sexually submissive, and I also find myself attracted to men who also tend to be sexually submissive. Right now, I've been dating a wonderful guy for a few months and recently was very excited to find out that he's interested in exploring his kinky side. I have a little more experience than he does, but not much, and this is something we'd really like to explore together. Unfortunately, I was dismayed to find out that he is also more interested in being the submissive one. I absolutely want to keep seeing this man and exploring this together. So I was wondering if you have any tips for how two subs can find their dominant sides together and learn how to access both of those energies and take care of each other sexually.
It's something of a cliche in BDSM land that most tops, most of the people out there doing the tying up and the spanking and the ordering around, are frustrated bottoms, that they are doing with someone that which they wish someone would do with them. And this doesn't make these tops worse tops. Often it makes them better tops because they have a bottoms imagination and a bottoms perspective on the things that they are doing as the top. So I'd encourage you and this new guy that you're dating, who is interested in kink and interested in BDSM, but also submissive, to take turns topping, to switch it up. You also have the option of getting involved in the organized kink scene and finding tops who'd like to top a submissive couple. And there are plenty of those out there. And many of them are, yes, frustrated bottoms who enjoy very much topping and doing with couples and doing to couples things that they wish that couple would do to them.
Hey, Dan. This is Allison. I'm a 29-year-old straight woman. I'm calling because I've started this kind of vague dating / fuck buddy relationship with my sort of shy, sort of awkward upstairs neighbor. And the problem is that for what feels like the millionth time, I think I'm sort of like the clandestine side woman. My neighbor and I are not monogamous. He's dating multiple people. I don't have a problem with that at all. But, you know, he's got a picture up on his Facebook page of him nuzzling some girl. And that's fine, except that somehow I'm like, I'm never the nuzzly. I'm never the person people date, you know. I'm like, I'm never the girlfriend. I'm always sort of like the woman people want to like fuck and go out with and have like a secret, interesting side deal with. I don't know. I mean, in a way that's like a very comfortable role for me. It feels sort of natural at this point. And I'm pretty independent and I travel a lot. So in a way, I almost lean towards those relationships, I guess. But at the same time, I don't like being cut out of the whole other side of the lives of the people I fuck, you know? Like, I'm never the person who gets invited to potlucks or weddings or dinners with family or weekends away. I'm always the, like, last-minute call. And I want to know what you think I'm doing wrong.
I like to say that there's no settling down without some settling for. What I'm about to say next may sound as if it's in conflict with that statement, but it really isn't. Okay, caller, there's what you've been willing to settle for, which is the fuck buddy and the piece on the side. And there's what you want, which is to be the piece and not the piece on the side. To not be the fuck buddy, but to be the girlfriend or the partner or the wife. And you have to ask for what you want. You have to put that out there. You have to say, I'm looking for a relationship. And for now, I'm only interested perhaps in having sex with someone who is also interested in having a relationship with me. No more fuck buddies. Because getting what you want sometimes means refusing to settle and allowing yourself to ache, lack, want, not have. Because if you're being the fuck buddy, that's going to eat up a lot of bandwidth, hopefully eat up a lot of pussy too. Hopefully your fuck buddies are paying attention to you. But it's going to eat up a lot of just emotional and sexual bandwidth where you're not available to someone who might want sex with you, but also a relationship with you because you have one or two or three or four fuck buddies who are taking up all of your time and eating up all of your pussy. But if there's nobody in your life because you've rejected the fuck buddies and you're prioritizing only being intimate with, being sexual with someone who maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't work out, but who is also interested in a lasting, long-term committed relationship and, you know, in the early stages of a relationship, auditioning you for that part as you are auditioning them for that part, sometimes you have to create a vacuum in your sexual life, in your romantic life, so that the person that you want, the person that you need, gets sucked in. If there's a whole bunch of people already sucked in who don't want what you want, who aren't going to give you what you need long term. There's not going to be enough pressure there, enough suction there to pull in the guy who wants what you want, who wants that relationship. So my advice to you, my prescription for you, is to stop being the fuck buddy. Even though it's convenient, you're busy, you travel, it's not making you happy. You don't want to be the piece on the side. It is possible to be busy and travel for work or pleasure or whatever else, be out of town a lot, and have a committed relationship with someone. That is a thing that you can do. It's a thing you're less likely to do if when you're home, you're fucking fuck buddies. If when you're home, you're out there online, but also out there in real life, going out with friends, looking for that guy and not willing to settle for now for the fuck buddies that you've been settling for in the past, you're likelier to actually find the guy who wants what you want, who wants you the way you want to be wanted.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm a late 20s straight woman from the East Coast, and I have a bit of a dilemma. So my sister is a few years older than me, and I'm in love with her husband. Her husband also loves me back. They've been together almost a decade, and over the years, me and him have become best friends. He's my number one best friend to this day, and about a year ago, we professed our love to each other. We haven't had sex, but we've kissed on many occasions, and there's been some light fondling. Anytime he's tried to take it further, I've shot him down because I love my sister very much and don't want to make the situation any worse than it already is. My sister has no idea, and me and her husband have agreed not to tell a soul, but it's starting to really eat away at me. I'd go talk to a therapist about it, but unfortunately I'm not well off enough financially. I really don't want to lose either of them. So I guess, Dan, my question is, do you have any advice for me on how to handle my situation?
Yeah, this one we would stuff immediately into that's a problem file. This is a fucking problem. The solution isn't counseling or therapy. A therapist is going to tell you to do what I'm going to tell you to do, which is to get the fuck away from your sister's husband, to stay the fuck away from your sister's husband. There are 4 billion-ish other men on the face of the earth. There is some other dude out there that you can feel as strongly about as you feel about your sister's husband. The myth of the one sometimes prompts people to pine after or chase after someone they can't have because that person is unavailable or because having that person will blow up their lives, the person that they want, their life too, the person that person is currently with, their life, their kids, if they have kids, their lives. And when you're in a situation like that, sometimes the best thing to do is just acknowledge that this hurts and it sucks, but you will not lead a loveless life. You will not have a life without passion if you go out there and try to find someone who already isn't married to your sister, which is most of the 4 billion men on the planet right now. Most of them, nearly all of them, aren't married to your sister. Go chase after one of them. There are 2 dynamics at play here that I think you would benefit from considering. First, you're in the infatuation stage. Infatuation is a spell, and the fastest way to break that spell is to fall under someone else's spell. Once again, I'm citing the most of the rest of the men on the planet who don't happen to be married to your sister. The other thing to bear in mind is we sometimes want that which we cannot have, and the fact that we can't have it makes it more desirable. And then once we have that thing that we couldn't have because we break our sister's heart, because we violate taboos, because we just go get it, suddenly we see it clearly for the first time. And we realize that what we got is someone who would leave his sister for her sister. What we got was something that isn't as bright and shiny or wonderful as we thought it was. So go find somebody else and tell yourself when you're just rolling on those MDMA-like feelings of infatuation for your sister's husband, that it's not rational. Those feelings aren't entirely rational. What's making them more intense is the impossibility of it. Sometimes we regard what's impossible as more romantic. The course of true love ne'er did run smooth. The more obstacles in our path, the more hurdles we have to clear, even impossible ones, can make the object of our desire seem that much more desirable by dint of its very unobtainability. But once we're aware of that, if we tell ourselves that, when we're overwhelmed by those feelings, we can reframe them. We can come to a new understanding. We can contain them and compartmentalize them and be in charge of them. Even if we allow ourselves a wallow or a masturbate every once in a while, we can be in charge of them rather than allowing them to be in charge of us. And we can prevent them from blowing up our lives and the lives of people around us.
Hi there. I'm actually calling in response to the most recent show with Sarah Silverman about little kids putting stuff in their butts. I have a 5-year-old, and our rule at home is that he can put his fingers in his butt in the bathtub. Bathtub is the place to play with your butt. And if he wants to diddle with his penis, he's free to do that in the privacy of the bedroom. But butt play is always for the bathtub, where his hands will be clean, his butt will be clean, and it's just a safe place to explore. But nothing but fingers go in the butt.
Hi, this is a comment for the woman in episode 587 who was having trouble after her kid was breastfeeding with her husband touching her breasts. And I'm here to tell you after 3 children that you can totally get that back. You are just so, so overtouched when your kids are little and breastfeeding and just all over you. And you just don't want to be touched that much anymore during sex. So anyway, you can get it back. It's just temporary. You and your husband are both paying a price right now, and it will be over soon. Promise.
Hi, I'm calling in regards to episode 587 with the woman who was talking to the 5'6" Dom, and I wanted her to know that I am dating a 5'6" Dom, and I happen to be the same height. He gets that a lot, but he cleverly said to me once the only difference between a 5'6" Dom and a 6-foot Dom is he needs a ladder to get on top of the refrigerator. The dominance is there. The control is there. The love is there. He's an amazing guy. Give the 5'6ers a chance.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. You can also email us your own MP3 recording of your question rather than phoning it in. Just email your MP3s to voicemail@savagelovecast.com. If you like my political rants at the top of the show, you should be listening to Blabbermouth, the Stranger's weekly politics podcast hosted by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Eli Sanders. Me and Eli and Rich Smith gather together every week to kick around the news and have some fun. Join us for Blabbermouth, available wherever finer podcasts are put. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Nicole Mazzio on Twitter at @PleasurePie. And follow Todd Starnes on Twitter at @ToddStarnes. I can't follow Todd Starnes on Twitter. That alleged unsubstantiated goat fillator already blocked me before this week's show. And this week's show, as every week's show, is produced by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.